Welcome to Trillo Talk. This is a podcast dedicated to topics that we think are important to the profession of medical writing. Our goal is to bring topical issues to the forefront and hopefully spark conversation in a wider domain about these issues. I am Julia Frejanich-Klaproth, and I'm here today with Barry Dries. And today we're going to be talking about the power of good review practice. And I'd like to start by just explaining why we think this is a topic worthy of discussion. I've been working as a medical writer for well over 20 years, and I can honestly say that if you were to ask me for my top three things that would really make a difference in terms of efficiencies, cost saving, lack of sleepless nights, everything involved in the arduousness of medical writing, review practice, improving review practice would definitely be in the top three. And I am astounded at how poorly reviews are done, how little people understand about them. And I think that it's important for us to kind of make a call to action as medical writers, professional medical writers, to say, look, this is unacceptable. And so that's what Barry and I want to talk about today.
Yes, let me just jump in and say, of course, I totally agree with Julia, but let me just try to add some numbers to give you an idea of the scope of this problem. Years ago, we were asked how much of the time that you spend in finalizing a document from start to finish is spent on the review processes and review meetings and dealing with comments. And the final result quite shocked me in that it turned out to be roughly 80%. And when I now give workshops on this or talks to clients and companies, I ask them, do you really think you're getting 80% of the value from all that time? And I think it's you know, as most things in life, it comes down to cost benefit. It is a huge cost, and the benefit is really small, not only because we're getting a lot of, and which we'll go into in a bit more detail, superfluous and useless comments. We're missing out on the really important things that review processes are supposed to be giving us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And, you know, the funny thing is we're in an industry where time is of the essence. We're trying to bring drugs to the market as fast as we can, right? And the delays that we see because of inefficient reviews are enormous sometimes. In addition to the added cost, you think of the size of some of the teams that are doing the reviews and the months that they spend doing sometimes redundant, meaningless rounds of review, how much cost that has in addition to the time. And I think this is something that people should be really banging the drum about, because there are ways to make it better. And I think we should start with the point that you made first, understanding the purpose of a review. I mean, why do we send a document out to people to look at? We need to start from there to understand where the problems are coming from.
And I think you can look at that problem already when you see who it is sent to. It's not just sent to 10 average people in the company. It's sent to a statistician. It's sent to a pharmacovigilance expert. Right. It's sent to a PK person. And why are we sending it to those people? Because we want their specialist input. So that's right. It always amazes me when what we get back from the statistician is pages and pages of comments about commas and formatting and things like that, that I think, why is a statistician spending their time doing this? And so irrelevant comments from specialists have two great dangers. One is we get all these comments that may or may not be applicable, may or may not fit the corporate style sheet. But in addition, that replaces the comments we're supposed to be getting, which is the statistical aspects of the study and its interpretation, for example.
Absolutely. And to go back to the real core of why we send a document out, I mean, ultimately, what we're trying to do is make sure that when everybody looks at what this document is trying to communicate, we're all in agreement that it's saying the same thing and it's saying it well. So what we're meant to be looking at is how well is the document communicating what we believe the messages are? But the problem is that people are not taught how to do reviews. They're not taught what their function is. They don't understand going into it, although you would think it is obvious that if you're giving it to a statistician, you're asking them to look at it from the perspective of a statistician. They don't realize that. And it's a bit of a fallback habit type of thing, because how do we learn to review documents? Well, we think back to how people have reviewed documents we've written, and those were school teachers or our parents or something like that. And what did they do? Well, they went in, they got a red pencil, and they found the spelling mistakes. And so somehow there's this kind of place in people's or brain that is saying, well, if I'm reviewing a document, I should be fixing mistakes. And they don't understand that what they're really there to do as a specialist functional provider or service provider is look at it from their expertise and say, do I think this document is communicating the messages that I think it has to be telling about?
I mean, it's interesting what you say, because it just gave me a thought for the first time ever in my career right this moment, is that maybe the word review needs to be reconsidered, because review, as Julia said, immediately makes us all think of school teachers rapping us on the knuckles with their ruler because we used a comma incorrectly. And what we're doing is not really that. And we're not asking for that. You know, we have style guides. We have people who are specialists who proofread and do those things. That's not what review is. Review is something different. It's what Julia was saying about strategic. We're going to talk about focused review. And that is why maybe we should be considering a different word for this process.
That because is a really interesting idea. I really like that. I'm not the type of person who usually goes for changing the name of the rose to something else because we don't like the name anymore, because that's not the problem. But in this case, if we could find a word that really captures the essence of what we want people to do, like messaging assessment or something like that, right? I that's just off the top of my head, but I like the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I
was just gonna say, I honestly think we should be making a bit of a call to a revolution here. We should be finding ways for all of us to be going out and changing this. And if it can start with something as simple as changing the mindset by using different language, let's try it.
Yeah, I mean, just to give you kind of an example of this, I have given a variety of workshops and trainings to companies over the years on review processes. And in one, I was explaining this concept and a hand shot up from the audience immediately. This is from somebody from drug safety. And they said, Barry, what does it hurt if I correct a missing comma or a wrong comma? Yeah. And I said, well, if you correct one comma, if I let you correct one comma, you're going to correct 10. And if I let you correct 10 commas, you're going to correct 200. And if you correct 200 commas, you're not going to do what you're being paid to do, which is to give us safety comments. Yeah. And that is exactly the problem. But you see how deep set. And in addition, I think this really is a great illustration of this principle by a guy named Daniel Kahneman, who won a Nobel Prize in economics for his book, or partially for his book, Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow, where he says that brains have evolved to think fast and to prefer thinking fast to thinking slow. What do I mean by that? Well, if you see a lion running at you, you think fast. I got to get out of here. You don't need to calculate. You don't need to consider it. You don't need to consider options. You just react. And that's why it evolved. We can also think slow. If I say, what's 16 times 47? You don't know the answer, but you know you can sit down and figure it out. The brain has also evolved to prefer fast thinking. You don't want to calculate the speed of the lion approaching you. You want to just get out of there. Unfortunately, we're not being faced by hungry lions much anymore. And when you look at a document, many people prefer the thinking fast. Ooh, they need a comma there, rather than the thinking slow, which is to say, I wonder if this section really communicates the aspect of bioequivalence that we're aiming for.
And that's because the thinking fast is the easy reaction. So when you see the spelling mistake or you see the comma, it feels good. It feels like you're doing something meaningful and you think, oh, yes, I've really contributed something to this document. To stop and think, oh, does this sentence really make sense? Is this sentence truly saying what I think it needs to, or this paragraph or this page, whatever it is you're looking at, takes more effort. And you're absolutely right. It's distinguishing between the quick and easy fix that makes it look like you're doing lots of work, but you're not bringing something meaningful, to letting go of that, knowing there's somebody there who's going to go through and check that there isn't a spelling mistake, so you don't need to focus on that, and using your precious time to do the hard part, which is to stop and think about whether it's communicating well.
The difficulty of dealing with this should not be underestimated. And we have for years at Trilogy tried to recommend that when you send it out for review, include cover letters for the various people saying, dear statistician, you are the, you should please focus your review on these questions and these sections. And yeah, still people go into parts they're not supposed to go into and correct commas.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
Even when we tell them. So I certainly recommend doing that to encourage this change to a more strategic and focused review. But it is daunting. And as soon as people start looking at a document with the ability to correct, they go back into schoolyard.
Habitual. Absolutely. I know. I mean, we have started giving trainings regularly, particularly for bigger projects, so dossier writing projects or something like that, where you have many people who are going to be working together for the next 12 months on this project. And we start out with having a training session to teach them about the problems of review and what good review practice is. So I think you're right. Telling people about it, informing them, is a good place to start. But you can't stop just doing it the once. You have to do it over and over and over again. And you can even put comments into the document saying, you know, Judy, I need you to review this section. You know, like a flag to say, Judy, don't worry about the rest. This is the part I really need to have your input on. Unfortunately, how many times I've done that and I've gotten the document back with comments from Judy on every other part except the section where the flag is. And I never quite understand that. But nonetheless, you know, we need to be diligent. We shouldn't stop the fight. We need to keep going. But it is not an easy thing to change the habits of people.
Rome was not built in a day. And as Julia was telling that anecdote, I was laughing of all the times I've put specific comments in the draft saying, you know, Dr. Jones or Mr. Smith or whatever, please. And they avoided it like the plague and put comments all over the place in other sections, but didn't say anything to that. So it's certainly not foolproof. I would like to add another one, though, and that's sort of my specialty is anecdotes. One time we were with a fairly small client and it went to the clinical director, the director of all clinical research. And they came back with all these comments about style and grammar and usage, 90% of which violated their own company style guide. So I wrote back to them and said, you know, this comment and this comment and this comment and this comment, we're all going to have to ignore because they violate your company style guide. Are you not familiar with that? Which was a stupid thing to write. In any case, they wrote back or they came back and said,
provocative.
I'm too important to read the style guide. To which luckily I had a response and I said, I agree. So don't make comments on it then.
Yeah.
And that is the point. I said, you have just spent your time, which you know is a lot more per minute than my time, making comments about things which in fact we cannot do because it's against your own company style guide. So if that's the case and you don't know it, which I totally understand, don't make comments on that.
But that's where the training becomes so important, right? That person really believed they were doing something meaningful. But they admitted themselves that their time is so much more valuable than everybody else's, but they wasted it. If we can make people understand that not only are they wasting their own time, they are then wasting the time of the entire team who, because it comes from, you know, the person up on high, has to sit there and debate, oh, you know, what do we do with this comment and how are we going to deal with it? If we can make everybody understand what they're supposed to be doing, maybe we could make headway in this. And I think maybe this is a good place to go over to talk a little bit more specifically about what real problems are, specific problems, and how we can avoid them from happening, or what people could be doing to make a review process better. So, I mean, there have been some surveys done. I know the European Medical Writers Association did one. And from our own experience, the common problems that you see with reviews are the one thing you were talking about. So the lack of focus or really strategic input. So people don't read it for content and they don't think about from their functional perspective, whether or not the document is communicating the right things. They also don't prioritize what they're looking at. So if you've already reviewed the methodology, for example, and now you're giving the document to the team with the data in it and the results, well, they don't need to go back and re-review the methods. They should understand that. They should be putting their effort and their priority on looking at the data.
I would add to that, you know, there's some graphs you can see, and there's a number of them in the internet that show that when you give a document of 100 pages, most of the comments you get are in the first 10 to 20 pages, and that the comments then start dropping as you go along. Even though many documents have the least interesting parts, things like the introduction and the materials and methods in the beginning, and the really important stuff like discussion and conclusion at the end.
Yeah.
And yet that's where you get the least comments. It's because people are not prioritizing. So again, as Julia says, training people to understand if, you know, your time is limited and everyone's time is limited, start with the conclusions and the discussion.
With the most important
then
thing.
Then move on to results and data and stuff. You know, do the other stuff at absolute last if you even do it at all.
If you do it at all. Exactly. And I think that that's another thing that we need to educate people on. And they need to learn to trust the system. There is a process in place that will ensure that all of those grammatical problems are cleaned up and cross links to the right places are cleaned up and formatting is cleaned up. They need to trust that that's going to happen and use their time for the really strategic parts of the document. Do you know, two other things that are a real burden in reviews is people not respecting the review timelines. So comments coming in late or not respecting what they've been told to do. And too many reviewers. So I was working for a company once, and for a standard CSR, there were over 50 people who provided review comments on that document. I kid you not. Now, I mean, the absurdity of having over 50 people review a clinical study report should go without say. And yet it's happening. It's still happening. And I think, you know, those two things, the respecting timelines and understanding how many people you need to actually make a meaningful assessment of this document, are two things that the industry should be talking about.
I'm going to slightly disagree with Julia here, just so we add a little spice to this discussion. And you don't think the two of us just say all the exact same things.
Go on, then.
Although I totally agree with Julia that late comments are really annoying and irritating. They're, I find, one of the easiest things to cure in a team if you spend some time with them, because pretty soon the whole team starts almost mobbing the person who's sending late comments and saying, you know, look, get your act together, because they realize how problematic that is. If we get all the comments but one person's and then we deal with them and then their comments come in, it kind of throws a wrench into the whole system. So
absolutely,
it's not trivial, but it is easier to deal with that, I think, than some of these other things, because people do begin to understand, okay, timelines and what timelines are, why they're necessary and stuff like that. The too many reviewers and the unfocused, I love the unfocused comments. One of the things I've taught is ban unfocused comments, like simply writing across the top of the page, unclear.
Yeah.
You know, one time we saw a document and written across the title page was bad. And I love that comment because I just think, could you be just a little bit more specific? You know, bad. And bad. So many companies I worked with who are trying to institute new review systems say, if it is not specific, if you don't say this paragraph does not make this clear or da 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 da, we are not going to even look at it. We are just going to ignore it. So comments, no sense making unclear comments like that. And what the word they use for it, which I like, is actionable. All comments must be actionable. In other words, rewrite this paragraph to make it clearer about the drug absorption or whatever. But don't just say, this is unclear.
So I'd like to use that as a springboard to some of the things that I consider to be fundamentals to what I call good review practice. And One of them is, if you make a comment in a document as a reviewer, make sure that you actually speak in such a way that whoever reads your comment is going to understand what your intention was. So I advise people to actually write their comments as full sentences. This might sound like it would make the thing long-winded, but coming off of what you said, you know, I've seen so often these sort of shorthand comments where you read it, you have no idea what it is, you go back to the person and say, what did you mean by this? And they don't even know themselves because it's so shorthand that it's become meaningless and they can't remember what their thought was. And they think, oh my gosh, this person might have had a really important idea, but they don't even know themselves. So if you're going to take the effort to write down a comment, make sure that people actually can understand what it is. Make sure that you yourself can understand what it is if you come back to it a week later. So provide clear directions using full sentences of what it is you want changed, what you think the problem is, and what you want changed. Just doing that alone would already optimize the review feedback that we get.
The full sentence thing is actually a good idea. I agree with Julia's comment in the beginning. When I first saw that, I thought, oh man, here we go back to school days. But actually, it's a really good comment because exactly that. Had the person written what exactly was bad, we might have had an idea of what they were talking about. But Just putting bad, we didn't even know if they meant the title page, the whole document.
The font? What's going on?
Yeah,
the font. What didn't they like? The size of the paper? You know? Okay, so another rule that I have when I'm talking to my teams is proactive revision is better than posing a question. And what I mean by that is, if you think something can be improved, show us what you think the improvement is. Because again, it takes away the guesswork when we're looking at it. But of course, I mean staying focused on content, not correcting the commas or stylistic things. Don't change, you know, somewhat to whatever, slightly or something like that. But if you think that a sentence can be improved or the structure could be better, the flow would be better, maybe if you took this idea and put it before another one, tell us that. Actually show us what it is that you want changed, because then you kind of have it in situ and it makes everybody, also other reviewers who look at it, go, oh yeah, I think that's good, or oh no, I don't. But if you just make a little comment on the side, they might not really understand what it is you're suggesting.
The only amendment I would add to that point, although I think it's an excellent point, and this is what I was talking about with actionable, rewriting is always better. But if you're working with a team that has a lot of non-native speakers, and I'm currently working on a project with a lot of colleagues in China, they feel unsure about rewriting. And so yes. I tell them, just tell me where you're going. As Julia said, maybe move this part to the front, Perina. And they frequently do that and then say, I will rewrite it. That's not the issue. But just tell me what exactly you're thinking.
Yeah,
and that is an important point to be made with non-native speakers, because sometimes they feel very intimidated about trying to write perfect English.
Well, it's a really good point, because I think there's a distinction that needs to be made. I'm not suggesting that anybody even go in and try and rewrite the document. It's more, and so I suppose you have to find that fine line in the gray zone of, yes, I want you to show me what it is you're trying to do, but don't feel that you have to get it down to the wordsmithing perfection. It's just, do you want this here or there? Which part of the sentence seems awkward to you? Highlight it. Just help guide us all, the writer and the other reviewers, to the area you think is the problem and what you think you would do to change it. And then everybody can decide whether or not they like it. But you're absolutely right. Nobody should have to be going in and doing a deep dive rewrite of anything. Another point that I make is that if you're going to make comments, try and prioritize them. Tell everybody, is this a live or die type comment? Like, you will not sign off on the document unless this change is made? Or is this I kind of noticed this and I think it's odd, but I couldn't care less if anything is done about it. Because time is always of the essence when you're getting these comments. And the first thing any good medical writer does is go in with the pile of comments and triage them. And if the reviewers tell you in advance, these are my top 10, these are my top priority comments, you have to deal with these, it helps us know which ones we can forget about if we run out of time.
I have two small comments to make on that. One is, I would love to see it if you ever succeed, Julia, in getting people to prioritize their own comments. I am worried that people would make all their comments priority one, but okay, I'm being cynical here.
No. We have used it successfully, and really? It's not that they make their comments priority one. They have to prioritize their own comments. So as they put a comment in, they have to give it a value. This is major, this is minor. Something like that.
I understand, but that's what I meant is they might say all their comments are major, but okay, I'm being cynical here.
Yeah.
I have faith in the mob.
I've seen people say minor point, ignore if needed, you know, something like that, or major. And it really does help when you're starting to triage which ones do I have to deal with today? Which ones can I leave as a nice to have?
That's true. And I have had reviewers put this is optional. The other point, though, I just want to throw in there, and that is people should be encouraged to indicate if their comment in order to address it is going to require further information or analyses and who is the person who would probably be able to get that. Because what happens is they make a comment, you go into the comment resolution meeting, and then there's this long half hour discussion not involving the writers of Trilogy, but involving the team in who actually can provide that information or do that analysis, which could all be done before the comment resolution meeting.
Yeah, so, they could have been a bit more proactive about it, right? Don't just throw the comment out there and hope it'll fix itself. If you know there's going to be follow-up analyses needed, as soon as you make the comment, they should get in touch with the person who does the analyses and say, hey, is it even possible to do this or something? I agree with you. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so another point, and just to let you know, I actually have 5 points in my good review practice. This is point number 4. Every review cycle counts. Now, this, again, is one of those things that might sound obvious, but one of the things that frustrates me is when you have people review a document very early in a program, you have a shell that you write maybe 6 months ahead of getting the data. And you give it to somebody to review. I've frequently seen that people don't really pay enough attention to it. And they make some kind of half-hearted comments on it, but they don't really know what to do with the part where you've mapped out what the data is going to look like. And so they don't make any comments on it. But that you then assume everybody's okay with the structure you've set up, that you don't need to review anything from the methods again. And what happens is you then get into the depths of draft one with the data and they go, why is this here? And you say, well, because we all agreed that's where we wanted to have it. And they go, well, I don't think this fits here. It should be somewhere else. And the problem is the early stage reviews are essential to set the stage so that when you get into bringing the data in, you're not still having to think that much about structure and the methods and all of those things. But if they don't focus at that early stage, then it's meaningless. Then you end up having to do the exercise later on anyways, and you haven't saved anybody's time.
And this is going to be another thing that's hard to get people to change their minds on, because many people still feel, well, you can't say anything until you've seen the data, which is ludicrous. And one thing I do with protocol writing teams, which is only sort of tangentially related to review processes, but is to say, okay, from the study you just told me, here's what your primary efficacy evaluation results table is going to look like.
Yeah.
And it could give you one or two. And they're kind of like, well, how can you, because this is what you've defined.
I know.
And that's what we want to do in early reviews, shell reviews, all that kind of stuff. Say, okay, this is exactly what we're expecting. And then it's going to go one way or the other. And that kind of thing is very hard to break through because people are busy and they say, oh, I don't have time for this.
You should have time for this. It's slow, isn't it? Yet again, you know, they look at it and they think, oh, I'll do the quick and easy stuff, but I don't want to have to stop and really get theoretical about what I think the data might look like and what order it should be put in. But giving good input early really can help avoid the need for rewrites later on when the document's already populated with all the data. And I think that's where we need to start to educate people with, that they understand the benefit also to themselves. It'll make the rewrites less arduous if they think about it early on. But I understand that it is challenging.
However, I'm going to throw in a point here that, again, has just occurred to me doing this podcast, and that is many of the issues I discover in documents are because the client gave me a model document and told me follow this as much as possible. And there were big problems in it. So we followed it, only changing the things we felt we absolutely had to change. And in the end, the team said, well, we don't like all this other stuff. And I go, well, that was what was in your model document. And I wonder many times whether if I just sat with a blank piece of computer screen in the beginning, we would save a lot of this stuff. And it's because people have not reviewed, the last review was poor, or the protocol was badly written, all these kinds of things where not enough review has happened along the way. I'm getting so excited, I knocked my microphone over. That you end up having to spend a lot more time in the end review correcting things that should have been sorted out in the beginning.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And I think that actually leads into my last point, which is respect lockdown sections. If you have a process in place where the team does an early review, they all agree to a section and they agree that we are not going to revisit it later, then don't. The whole point of that exercise is to save time later on, and in order and to do exactly the focusing, the strategic review we were talking about. And it defeats the purpose. If people have all agreed this section does not need to be looked at again, then people should leave it alone and be focusing their review on the section that needs their attention now.
But the proof of how hard and challenging that is that we have often resorted to things like changing the font color to light gray so that you could hardly read it, or blacking out sections, and you'd be shocked at how much pushback we get to that.
I had a document. This is a true story. I had a document where we took the entire first half. It had been reviewed three times, agreed to, locked down. We made it the lightest gray font there is. So basically, it was essentially invisible on the page. We had a big green highlighted text at the beginning of the document that said, all of the light gray text should not be reviewed. Please go straight to the results. The document came back and somebody had reviewed the entire thing and wrote in big, angry, bold letters, this was very hard to read. Why was it in this font color? So, I mean, it is an incredibly big challenge that we're up against to try and change the behavioral patterns of the industry. But it's something that's so worthwhile. And I think this is our call to action, that everybody needs to start. And it's going to be changing it person by person. We need to teach them. We need to help them understand what it is they're doing wrong and how much better life can be if we were to get this right. I've had teams who've come out of review sessions that I've run with them and said, oh my gosh, that was so efficient and easy and painless. I wish it could always be like that. And that's where we want people to get. We want them to understand that this will improve everybody's life as we do this process.
I completely agree. I've had the same experience when I've run review meetings and the whole team is like amazed that although we booked an hour for the comment resolution meeting, we were done in 45 minutes. Yeah, and people said, I have never in my life had a comment resolution meeting that even didn't run to double the time. And you actually beat your timeline. The other thing I would just say is, you know, Julie and I are telling these horror stories from our long experience in medical writing. And of course, we laugh when we hear them. This is not a laughing matter.
No.
Although I'm kind of laughing even now, it is deadly serious because tons of time and effort. But it's not just time where we're talking about a drug being approved in 6 months versus a year. It's also quality and things not being seen.
Exactly.
People just glazing over when they get to certain sections because they've spent too much time reviewing trivialities. We need better quality review, and we need to do it by talking about some of the things and changing them. And yeah, Julia and I are basically saying we need a complete revolution and overhaul in the way documents are reviewed.
Absolutely. And ultimately, if we can teach people these things, it means they're going to have more time to really focus on the content, to craft meaningful text, so that when these documents go to the agencies, they understand what we think these things mean. And ultimately, this will help get drugs to market sooner. It will make a difference. And it starts with us. It starts with everybody going out and banging the drum and making sure that our colleagues understand why this is so important.
Totally agree.
Great. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up. So thank you for listening to Trillo Talk today. If you enjoyed it, please do come back and listen to us again. If you have feedback on this or any of our sessions, we would love to hear it. And if you have ideas for future topics that you would like us to cover, please let us know. You can send us your comments on our Twitter feed or our LinkedIn page. And just as a reminder, you can find all our episodes of the Trillo Talk podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and on our website, trilogywriting.com/Trillo Talk.
And I'm going to throw in a little comment here, and that is, if you agree with us that this is a problem, especially at your organization or company or whatever, do get in touch with us. We can discuss it more in detail and discuss possible things you might try or that we together can do. So,
yeah, as you can tell, this is a topic that we can talk about for a very long time.